it's gonna be good.
Hope it don't flood.
Oh, it's Woods of Streams.
Good afternoon, Clear Creek County. Welcome to What's Upstream. I'm your co-host, Mark Cuccinelli, here with the estimable Lori Beckel. Good afternoon,
thank you,
Lori. And Lori, you want to introduce our guests for today?
Oh, I am just so pleased to introduce our guests. We have our new sheriff on with us today, Sheriff Ron Thornton. Will be speaking with us for our first half hour, along with Jennifer Fulton, who is the public announcement
information
public information officer for the sheriff's department. So this should be a wonderful opportunity to catch up with the sheriff's department.
Looking forward to that. What do you got for us before we get started?
Well,
there,
we have a couple of PSAs. This most important one really concerns supporting this wonderful community radio station, KYGT. And we would just employ all of you folks out there, our listening audience, to please consider making a donation to this radio station. As you know, we're all volunteers here. And we support this radio station with the funds that we get right now and the time and talent of the volunteers. So if you would please go to our website, there are ways that you can donate there. There's a click to donate now button on the website. You can set up a regular payment of any amount through PayPal. And you can mail us a check, and the address for the radio station is there on the website. What is most appreciated is to make a regular, small is fine, but a regular recurring payment to the radio station, because that becomes funds that can be counted on month after month. So please support us. And go to the website and find a way to donate.
Let me make a recommendation. I think we all have a number that we could donate on a monthly basis, set up through PayPal, where you wouldn't even notice the money being gone. Maybe it's a dollar, maybe it's $5, whatever it is. You know, there's an amount I think that all of us could easily contribute. And you know what? Then you're part of the radio station, and you know, you're engaged in your community in a way that you're not. And for a very small price, you get to do that.
Exactly. Yeah. And it may even tell your neighbors. Rave about this wonderful small community radio station. Tell your neighbors. Let's get them listening, and let's get them signed up as well.
There you go, Lori. What else you got?
The other thing is the gift card program that I think is still going on.
It's over today,
until today. And you can stop by and buy a Idaho Springs gift card. I think you can buy them from almost any of the merchants in town. And you will be entered to win one of 10 $500 Idaho Springs shopping sprees should you buy one of these gift cards.
And that's your last chance is today, Wednesday the 17th. And if you go on out there, don't get blown away. That wind is fierce today.
Boy, it is.
But before we start with our guests, I forgot to say that this is KYGT LPFM 102.7, 103.9 on your FM dial. And the website that Lori referred to is Clear Creek Radio.
com. Right. And you streaming can, worldwide.
Oh
right,
man,
Mark?
Yeah. I'll be in Italy soon, and I'll be listening every day.
Fabulous. So we have people across the world that will be listening to our new sheriff and to Jenny Fulton today. So are we ready to get started?
Ron and Jenny, thank you so much for coming in today. We know how busy you are trying to keep the community safe and well-informed, Jenny. Thank you so much for that. And let's just get started, if I may, with Jenny. Tell us what Ron, we'll get to you, but let's get down to brass tacks here. I know it's so important when we have some kind of a major event in the community to get that information out into the community so people are aware, because they could be concerned in a way that maybe is not appropriate, and information is power. So yeah. Tell us about what you do.
Well, first of all, thank you for having us on. We really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
So what I do as a public information officer is I share information about breaking incidents that mm-hmm. could impact our community, or people are just wondering why there's 5 law enforcement vehicles in one location, mm-hmm. what's going on.
Right.
Typically, I share that information. The quickest way to reach our residents is through social media, for those who are on social media. And we also use traditional media. So, for example, when we had a series of burglaries up Highway 103, and the night that we were actually looking for the suspect and we had an active search going on up there about mile marker 3, mm-hmm. I reached out to media because I knew we would be able to show them a video of our suspect. And a lot of people are watching the news, so they get their information either through social media or traditional media. Mm-hmm. So not only did we post to social media about that incident, but I also called all the news stations directly and I said, here's what we have going on. And then they refer to our social media for updates, which is a little bit, eases the burden on me a little bit if everybody goes to one source.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to make sure we were hitting people that are on social media as well as watching the news.
Very important to have that information disseminated in the community. And I just want you to know that we are at your service anytime. And so if you need us anytime, I'm sure either Lori or myself or someone else maybe in the radio station could come in if there's some sort of a prolonged event that needs more elaborate description.
Great, and I appreciate that offer. Mm. I definitely will partner with you guys when we have something like that. And you have been helpful in the past in helping us promote public events that we participate in and those mm-hmm. type of things. So you guys are definitely a great partner.
Glad to do it, and thank you for that. Ron, so here we are.
How you doing, sir?
Welcome to the radio station, and congratulations on your appointment. Or maybe I should save that for when you retire, the congratulations part. But nevertheless, you've got a big responsibility, and you seem up to the task and ready to go. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, first off, like Jenny said, thank you guys for inviting us on. Mm-hmm. More than happy to come on and have conversations with you guys anytime we can.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit about myself. Moved to Colorado in 2001. Come out here on vacation in 2000, fell in love with the mountains. Moved to Colorado in 2001. Lived in Denver for a year and did not like the metro area. I needed to be out in the mountains, and so I moved over to Bailey, and I was in Bailey for 20 something years.
Mm-hmm.
During that time, I think it was 2004, I joined the Platte Canyon Fire Department. Started out, it was a small volunteer department, and then it grew and we became what's called a combination fire department. It consists of both paid employees and volunteers. I've served with them close to 17 years, and I worked my way up from firefighter up to lieutenant, then up to captain when I decided to leave. And in 2006, the Platte Canyon School District experienced a horrific incident, the school shooting over there, and I was on scene with that as a firefighter. But one of the things was, my daughter was also in that school at the time.
Boy.
And as a firefighter, I was on the outside. And me being who I am I wanted to be on the inside. After the incident was over, the Park County Sheriff's Department came to the fire department and was recruiting medics to join their SWAT team to have SWAT medics available. So I applied for that. I was selected to that, was sent to school and everything, and that's how I got my start in law enforcement.
Mm.
And then we, Park County and Clear Creek County, worked real close together on different SWAT missions and stuff like that. And so I knew a little bit about Clear Creek County, and I really liked it over here. And 2017, I made the move to come to Clear Creek County full-time. And I resigned from the fire department and decided to make law enforcement a full-time career.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been, started out in the jail in 2017 and then worked my way into patrol. When I was there, that was kind of, first started, it was kind of the way you got onto patrol. You start in the jail, then move out onto the road and stuff. And so during that time, I've met some wonderful people. I've grown to love this community. I've got great connections out here. I love helping people. And with I-70 come through the middle of the county, the volume of people that come through this county every single day is, you never know who you're going to meet. You never know what circumstances you're going to come across. And it's just an extremely fulfilling job. I promoted up to sergeant of patrol probably 3 years ago, maybe, I think it was. And Sheriff Harris came on board at that time. We've been going through some difficult times prior to that, and the sheriff's department, in my honest opinion, was not going the right direction. When Sheriff Harris came on board, he fixed a lot of the issues. He changed the culture there. He made it where this was a place where I really wanted to spend the rest of my career here. He sold us on his vision and how the modern model of policing. And everybody there bought into it. And I really liked the direction we were going. And with him leaving and taking another position in another agency, it left a hole. And I was brought a couple of individuals at the department brought the idea to me and about me possibly running for sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would have to move, you know, into county and all that. And there's Under Sheriff Brown, Matt Brown, does an amazing job as an under sheriff. He was initially he was slotted to be appointed sheriff. Me and the under sheriff got together. We discussed all the different scenarios. And unfortunately, in this point of his life, he was not able to. He lives in the metro area. He was not able to move up into county within the time frame and to be able to run for sheriff.
All required by state law.
It's all required by state law. You have to live in county a year prior to running for sheriff. And you know, I won't go into, you know, the different reasons why he could or couldn't, but I presented the option and to the different command staff. We all got together and had a meeting, and they were 100% supportive of me taking over. I know the direction that Harris has pointed us. We still have goals that we're working on that Harris had set in place. The concern for everybody was when a sheriff, whether he's appointed or elected, it's not a standard, but it's very common for a new sheriff to come in, and especially if he's not associated with that agency. And he will come in and you work at the will of the sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
And he can come in and completely get rid of all the command staff. And we're such a small department. I could not let that happen. You know, I don't know if it would have, but I didn't want to take that risk. We have made a lot of progress over the last 4 or 5 years, and I did not want to see anybody come in and change what we're already working toward. And with that, I applied for the interim sheriff position, and I went through the interview process with that. I've got residents in the county within the time frame, and my goal is to run for position of sheriff next November.
Mm-hmm.
You were appointed by the county commissioners about a month ago.
Yep. 2 days, it will be actually a month. Mm-hmm. So, yes, yeah. Ma'am.
And congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I have just a couple of reactions to what you've said. Well, first of all, we wish you nothing but the best, 100% support. We need a safe community that has a great relationship with our sheriff's department, and that's all we have ever desired, and that's what we want. And a modern department is sounds like the way to go. But I would say the point that you made when you were on scene in that tragic shooting in Park County, that's the mentality of the first responder. Everybody else is going this way, and you want to go that way. You know, having been in that world, you know, we just want to jump in there and help as best we can. And,
yes,
and
sir.
So that was very enlightening when you said that. So glad to hear you say that. And also something else I have to say, Seth Marquardt, Matt Brown, two of your key lieutenants in the department, and yourself all came up through the jail. And
absolutely.
And I think that is so important to have somebody who has that literally from the ground up exposure to the department. I think it's very important. I'm glad that you came up that way.
Yeah, I totally agree with that sentiment. It is, I would like to see any patrol deputy to go through the jail.
Mm-hmm.
It is such a valuable experience, teaching, you know, empathy, you know, because people are, the inmates or the detainees, you know, they're still people, and they still got problems just like you or I have problems.
Most of them are still innocent people.
Exactly. And, you know, my theory was, you know, I'm not your judge or your jury.
Right.
I'm just here to make sure you're safe and then well taken care of until you see the judge.
Mm-hmm.
And it teaches you how to talk to people and show empathy and show different, you know, be able to take somebody that's highly escalated or going through a mental health crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps you. It gives you different tools to be able to use to talk these individuals down or get them to calm down, and without having to utilize force or anything like that. And I think it is so important to learn those skills, and the jail is a great place to learn those.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Lori, did you have anything you want to jump in? I got 100 questions, but...
go ahead, Mark.
Well, thanks. Tell us a little bit about your relationship with the town of Georgetown.
Oh, right. Yep.
The town of Georgetown, we have a really good relationship with them. Last year, I think it was last year.
December of 23.
Yeah, 23, okay. They started losing individuals and not being able to fully support with their community, with the police, their police department. So we were picking up the extra calls and, you know, assisting them. And we built a good relationship with them. We would help them on special events, their pond hockey tournaments, the Christmas market. And then it came up, their police department was disbanded. And now they have no police department. So their options are, they either have got to hire an entire new police department, go through the training, or contract with us to provide their police services. And we've been working on an IGA with Georgetown for over a year. And happy to say that, was it Tuesday? Two Tuesdays ago, Georgetown signed the agreement for us to provide police services for the city of Georgetown for the next 5 years. And then our board of commissioners just signed the agreement last Tuesday. And so we are officially now the serving Georgetown and providing them with the police services that we offer mm-hmm. the rest of the county.
Mm-hmm. Let's put our cards on the table here. That was Georgetown's problem with their police department was a direct result of the Christian Glass tragedy. And this is the sort of thing that the sheriff's department, I know, has worked very hard to move on from and learn from the mistakes that were made in the culture that existed at that time. And when I heard you refer to modern policing tactics, that was the first thing that came to my mind, mm-hmm. was moving on from that tragedy.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I 100% agree it was a total tragedy, and there were mistakes made all across the board. But from my standpoint, it's in reality that was three administrations ago. That was Albers, mm-hmm. then John Stein, and then Sheriff Harris. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to take anything away from the family or anything like that. It was horrible what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wanting to move this department forward, keep building those relationships with the community, keep improving on our policies and procedures on how we handle people that are experiencing crisis.
Yeah, I'm sure that the Glass family, that hole that exists can never be filled. But if they knew that the department was changed in a positive way, I'm sure that that would go a long way to relieving some of their grief.
Yeah. I would hope so.
Well, good. Accountability, I think, was where everything needed
yes.
to start.
Yes, ma'am.
And it really didn't initially. And that's why our community was torn apart for quite a period of time prior to Matt Harris coming aboard.
And Sheriff Harris, he did a great job with that mm-hmm. in putting us on the right path and to get past.
It's just amazing
changes.
To me to think about then, you know, you're sitting down and having conversations with all of the other, I'm assuming mostly all men, about your taking the position and making sure you had support. And I think that's just a wonderful thing to know that's the way it happened.
Yes,
through conversation.
Yes, and we have a lot of women in our department, mm-hmm. and they were not excluded from these conversations.
Good.
Just to be clear.
Yeah, just to be clear.
Jenny, if the sheriff wouldn't have said that, I would have.
Jenny has been amazing, and she is definitely a rock that I lean on. Mm-hmm. And so I look forward to working with her and everybody in the department and the community.
So the way the whole thing happened.
Yeah, good. It is. It's great. But moving forward, you've got challenges with staffing. I know that. Tell us a little bit about that. That's an ongoing problem that, you know, you didn't create or anything. But
exactly. And since I've been here, Clear Creek has been what I call a stepping stone agency. People get out of the academy and they're fresh out of, you know, school to learn how to be a police officer. Mm-hmm. They come up here and they'll stay long enough to get a couple of years experience. And then the metro area, where majority of everybody lives, is in the metro area.
Sure.
They can go down there and make $40,000 to $50,000 more a year.
Mm.
Our pay was way behind the market, and we were being used as a stepping stone agency. It started with Matt Harris, and you know we're continuing the improvements. But we did a wage study, took it to the commissioners, and they saw what we were telling them. And now our pay, you know, we're not as good as the metro area, but we're competitive. And now that we offer more incentive for people to stick around. With that, getting the pay adjusted, now we are in the process of getting FPPA. FPPA is a retirement program.
Right.
And when that's finalized, it's looking like possibly third, fourth quarter of next year. You can take somebody that has 10 years of experience down at a local metro police station. They normally have FPPA. We can't recruit those people up here because they don't want to lose their retirement.
It's like para.
Yeah. It's a version of that, yeah. And they, if we can offer FPPA, they can roll their retirement over to us. And then that's going to, okay, they're paying close to what I'm making now. They've got the same retirement that I have. I can roll it over. I'm tired of coming into work and have 40 calls stacked on the board before I even start my shift. And then I will, it comes to a slower pace compared to a big metro area.
Right.
And with that type of incentive, we're able to attract more candidates, more experienced candidates. And, you know, we're not constantly training people fresh out of the academy that's never been a cop. Now we're getting applicants that are 7, 10, 15-year veterans that have all this experience from a big metro agency that is now wanting to come up and work for us.
Yeah. You know, as a paramedic, I had, exposure to the bigger departments in the metro area, and it's just a different environment. And I'm sure police work is exactly the same way that, as you said, you're constantly churning. Whereas up here, you have different challenges, and you really have to be an independent agency sometimes in and of yourself. And,
yes.
Certain people enjoy that sort of a challenge, and the money becomes maybe secondary if it's close.
Yeah, and that's 100% correct. We recently recruited a person that came from Denver. And it was when she was going through the training process, it was interesting to see the differences how Denver has it. And we made a good arrest on a guy that had a violent felony warrant. And there was a lot of evidence that we had to book in. And we were work day shift, and we were supposed to went home at 5. And by the time we got the suspect booked in, now we got to go book in the evidence because we do it all.
Mm.
And she was like, "We got to book this in?" And I'm like, "Yeah, we got to do everything."
Yeah.
And like at a big metro area that's got hundreds of people,
yeah,
they just turn their evidence over to an evidence tech, and then they process
everything's
everything.
Compartmentalized,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But up here, we get to do it all. And that's one thing that I like about it. It makes you a more well-rounded officer.
Yeah.
So, Sheriff, you've got at least another year in your tenure, and hopefully more, right?
Exactly.
But what are some of your immediate goals? Because we're running out of time here. But tell us what you got on your plate.
So for this year, we're looking forward to continuing the forward progress that Sheriff Harris has set in place.
Mm-hmm.
We're focusing on recruiting, retaining qualified, experienced employees. And ensuring that we have supervisor coverage on every shift, sergeants on every single shift, both in the jail and on patrol. And then working on the community engagement, transparency, I don't want, anybody think we're hiding anything or anything like that. We're 100% transparent on everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then, once we complete all the goals that Sheriff Harris has laid out and everything, then, one of my goals that I'm looking forward to in the future is, I want to make Clear Creek County a premier mountain law enforcement agency where everybody's wanting to come work for us. Whether it be competitive pay, retirement, technology, I'm wanting to really focus getting some people trained up and getting them trying to start an interdiction unit. With I-70 going through our county, right through the middle, the amount of drugs and stuff that we get off the highway, I just want to try to reduce that and focus on, interdiction and staying, involved with the community every way possible.
Would you mention just quickly, you or Jenny, the CAC, which was started by Matt Harris, but didn't really start meeting until
right.
Sheriff Thornton.
Yep. Exactly. Actually, we had our first meeting in November, and we just had our second meeting Monday this week. This is a community group of 14 community members that meet with the sheriff's office once a month, and it strengthens the trust that the sheriff's office has amongst the community members. It gives us an opportunity to get feedback from the members. What are they hearing from their neighbors and their friends in the county? Mm-hmm. Are there concerns that they're hearing about related to public safety? How can we address those concerns? So it's really an information sharing opportunity. We talk about some of the initiatives going on at the sheriff's office. We talk about the patrol division and the detentions division, the organization and how it runs and those type of things. And then we learn from the community members. We're asked a lot of questions. It's really a good opportunity for us to get to know the community better and for the community to get to know us better.
Well, this has been a great conversation, and we're so happy that we had an opportunity to introduce you to the community, Sheriff. Thank you for so much for coming in, and Jenny, thank you, and we are at your service.
Have you back.
Yeah. We'll have you back to have an update sometime soon, okay?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks again. And, well, until then, good luck in your new position, and hope everything goes as planned.
Well, thank you very much, and it was an honor to be here.
Stay with us, folks. We're going to take a brief intermission, and then coming back after our intermission, we will have a conversation with Chief Nathan Busick, who is here in the house, and we'll hear about Idaho Springs law enforcement.
Okay, we'll be back shortly. Thanks. Everyone, we're back, and this is What's Upstream. I'm your co-host, Mark Cuccinella, here with Lori Beckel, and this is KYGT LPFM 102.7, 103.9 on your FM dial, streaming over clearcreekradio.com. Lori, take it away.
Well, we do have one other PSA. I think Val Heiderson actually is one of the DJs.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah.
She's great.
She also is a guitar teacher and professional guitarist, bassist, and performer. And she just wants you to know that she is available for guitar lessons at 303-907-8020. Another reason to listen to KYGT and make a contribution.
She is such an interesting young woman. I had her on my show once. I asked her, I said, so Val, can you play any classical guitar? She goes, you bet. I said, well, come on in. She came on during the classical show. It was wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Her father was in Iceland listening as we.
Heiderson, you think? Just got a lot of vowels in that last name.
Okay. So.
So anyway, welcome to Chief Busick. Thank you so much for coming in.
Sure.
And we get to now catch up with sort of what's going on in Idaho Springs. And you've now been the chief of police here in Idaho Springs for 5 years. Wow.
Yep, coming up on 5 years. Thanks for having me on the show. It'll be 5 years here in April of next year, so not quite, but almost 5 years. And like I said, thanks for having me. A few things that I'd love to talk about, of course. The first thing would be the police station project that's going on.
Number one on my list.
Number one. I kind of, and you know what? It's right there. It's part of the reason that the city chose that that location. First of all, it sat empty for more than a year, and the bank just was not. It was a bank. The bank was not selling, and so. City leadership said, you know, this is a location that's central to the city. It kind of bookends the historic district on the east side, and it's right across the street from City Hall. So it really seemed like it was just the right fit. And with Idaho Springs, as we all know, there's not a lot of real estate that's oftentimes comes available for something like that, that's as unique as a police station. So, you know, we did some due diligence and some research on the property, and the city was able to obtain the property at a pretty low number. If I remember right, it was around $640,000 or $50,000 for that property, which when you look at just properties and houses in the city, that's comparable. And it was it's a larger site. And like I said, right there, centrally located at Colorado and Riverside. So then we, as a city, we applied for a DOLA grant. And we were, and we also looked at what the costs would be for the project. So the projects, it came in just a little bit over $3 million for this project to transform that building to a modern police station with, you know, best practices. And I'll get into a couple of the lists of things that we're really excited about with this building. But, and we did apply for a grant through DOLA, and we got $1 million. So, the city, you know, So the city's really on the hook for the $2 million, and we have the $1 million from DOLA. Mm-hmm. There's a number of things that I'm excited about, so, and I can go on and on about this building, but I invite people, if they want to schedule a tour at our current building, our trailer that we're in right now. I mean, it's really not conducive to a lot of things. We will be adding, first of all, a private interview room, so we can talk to people about sensitive matters that come in. And unfortunately, it's a bit embarrassing when we have somebody who's going through something traumatic or serious, and here they are in the lobby of our current building, and then in walks someone else to, you know, get a VIN inspection. So we will have an interview room, you know, and then we'll have our evidence storage will be in our building. Currently, our evidence is stored at the basement of City Hall, so we have to trek it across, you know, town to log it in over there at City Hall once it's logged in at our current location. So that will increase productivity. We will also have a training room. That's one of the things I'm most excited about. We don't have a training room in our current building. Oftentimes we use the fire station in Dumont for that. Great relationship with them, and they let us use that. But we will have our own training room, and we're excited about hosting some trainings, having some instruction come up from the metro area and be in our building. So I can't wait for that. And then on top of that, we also have
That training room can be also used as a meeting place if the community were to schedule that with us. Mm-hmm. And they would still have access to our break room based on the way the design is. So you could actually host an event in that building, and you'd have a public restroom that you'd have access to, the training room, and the break room that has, you know, a microwave and a sink and whatnot. So
wow, that's terrific.
We designed it that way on purpose. So I'm excited about that part of it. And then we also will have a locker room. Currently, we don't have a locker room in our building. And so we will have a locker room that has a shower. Mm-hmm. And I tell this story, and I'm not trying to say woe is us, but you know, we had an officer that unfortunately had to do CPR on a person who had animals who had, had made messes that weren't cleaned up. And this officer ended up, you know, doing CPR and doing his best to save this individual. And I think the person lived, if I remember right. But the officer that night, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, went to the car wash here and literally used the car wash to spray off his pants and his uniform for his shower. So just not a good situation. So I'm excited about that. And I'm also excited because it's going to help with recruiting. You know, we have people that want to walk through and see the department, they're mm-hmm. going to see a modern building, a modern facility. So that's just a few of the things. And then on top of that, as part of the DOLA grant, you're going to see solar panels on that building. So you're going to see renewable energy as part of that project. We actually, as a city, this will be the first time, and a lot of people have heard of LEED, and we're following a similar path that's called Green Globes, and you can get one, two, or three, and we're shooting for one, which is, it is a lower end, but it still goes into renewable issues, renewable energy, and building the building efficient. So that it's sustainable and efficient
building. Yeah.
So it'll be the first time in the history of Idaho Springs that we have a government building that is going to meet that Green Globe.
Yeah.
Well, it's an older community, right? Older buildings. So since we're going to do it, we're trying to do it the right way. So,
good deal.
So, yeah, I'm excited about it.
Chief, I just want to support what you've been saying. When I was a paramedic, and first of all, when I first started, the police department was in the basement of City Hall,
yes.
and that was in an adequate facility down there, to say the
sure.
least. But then when you moved in to the State Patrol garage down there,
sure.
If I had to go and treat someone for whatever reason, whether it was a blood draw or some medical emergency of some kind, I'm doing it in this open area, and there's no privacy afforded to the patients or anyone else, and it's just an unacceptable situation.
Sure,
it is.
Sure, I couldn't agree more. It's but these things, they cost money, you know, and they
right.
and you're also looking for the right fit and the right. Leadership within the city and the police department to kind of take that and seize that moment and that opportunity. So I'm proud and happy that the city did that. Now, we have run into a few hiccups with this building. We are on pace to be finished in July of this year. We're a little bit behind schedule. We're a couple months behind schedule. And, you know, it's the history of the building. You know, for people that live here and are residents, longtime residents, they know that it used to be a service station and a gas station.
Right.
And that's always kind of the big sort of scary moment.
Are there tanks underground?
Yep. And unfortunately, we did, when we were examining the property and we did some of our testing, we missed it. And there was a tank that was underground.
Mm.
So it was a smaller tank. It's believed to be that it was probably diesel fuel. Not a huge tank, but it was completely compressed. It was rusted out. And, of course, it had leaked over the last 40, 50 years, 60 years underground.
Mm.
And so there was nothing really left, but there was still remediation that we had to do. So there were anywhere from 15 to 20 truckloads of dirt that we had, you know, we had to report to the state. We had to get all that dirt taken out of there.
Mm, right.
Of course, it delayed things. And now we've gotten the blessing that we've done what we can do, our due diligence, to make sure that the site is good to go. And so that's one little sort. I say little. It's a costly thing. But at least the site is now clean moving forward for our city. So that's good. But it was really interesting when they did drillings before we even purchased the property. Mm-hmm. They must have missed it by about 3 feet. Literally the drilling went down about 8 feet into the ground in different sections of the property, and they just missed it. And they were up above it when they did that drilling. So the materials were going down away from where the drilling went. It was just sort of an unlucky thing that we ran into.
It is unfortunate. Yeah, sure. But yeah. So the building, I go by there and I see all this activity going on. You must have completely changed the inside of the building.
Yes, the inside and the outside are going to be completely changed. So basically where the drive-through was will be enclosed. So that's part of the building that we will maintain one drive-in area where there's other parts that I didn't mention today. We are going to have what's called a temporary holding area. We're not a jail. We're not going to keep people overnight. Mm-hmm. We're not feeding people. We're not doing any of that.
Right.
But if we have someone that is cooperative, a DUI is a good example, where we can bring them into our police station. Our intent is to have a breathalyzer room that also has a fingerprint machine. So we could process a cooperative DUI person right there and then send them home with a sober person.
Hmm.
And so right now, currently, we drive all the way to Georgetown.
Yeah.
We do that same process.
Inefficient.
And by the same token, it's the same thing for minor warrants. You know, somebody they forget to appear in court. Now they have a warrant because they didn't appear. So the process is now we have to drive them to Georgetown. They have to be fingerprinted. They're basically given a new court date, and then they leave. So we can do that same process right here in Idaho Springs and not have our people moving up and down I-70.
Mm-hmm.
It's not efficient.
Efficient and a much better practice,
yes.
I would imagine.
Yes.
Well, and we were talking before we went on the air about the last time the three of us were in the studio, and it was soon after the Christian Glass tragedy. We were talking about the impact on the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say congratulations for having a modern facility to match your modern culture, which Mark and I learned a lot about during that radio show.
Sure.
About how you approached law enforcement.
Right.
And then having our new sheriff on just the last half hour.
Right.
And his continuing to want to create a modern culture for law enforcement for our sheriff's office. And I'm thinking you must be pretty happy with all of this.
Absolutely. You know, I listened a little bit before I came and heard the sheriff mention Matt Harris.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fantastic working with Matt. He was really what the county needed, I think, to kind of point the needle in a different direction. And I honestly feel like Sheriff Ron Thornton is going to continue to move in that same direction. It's important because we all work together, being that we're smaller, that Mark has mentioned. We rely on each other, and we want to make sure that we're all doing things the right way for the right reasons. And, you know, I did hear the sheriff mention this, and I mentioned this to people, too. The one word that really has helped me in my 26 years in law enforcement and just in life in general as a father, as a husband, is empathy. And that's an important word. And I mean, I say that, and I kind of get chills on my arms here. And I say that because whether it's empathizing with people that I work with, or it's empathizing with the challenges the sheriff's department has, or empathizing with business owners, or empathizing with somebody who's made a poor decision and used drugs or committed a crime, whatever that is, it's really gotten me far in my career. And it's because people recognize that. Mm-hmm. They see that it's genuine, and they see that what we're trying to do and create in our culture is not only accountability, which is really at the top of the list, but having that ability to connect with the people that you interact with, whether it's, you know, you pull them over for speeding on the highway or whatever that is, or you're having to take somebody to jail. So, and it's easy to sit here and say that, but now how do I get this sort of mentality in the people that are supervisors, mm-hmm. who are then using and that and creating that same mentality in the people they're supervising. Mm-hmm. So that's always the big challenge. But in a smaller agency, not as bad. But if you're thinking about Aurora or Denver or places like that, that's why I can't fathom that, because my way of thinking, the way I want police work to be done, I want it a certain style, and we're all going to do things a little differently. But I want us to be in a certain framework and a certain lanes, and that's what I expect. And so I think it's much more challenging when you have 100 officers or 300 officers or five. That's hard. Yeah. So I feel lucky to be here and be here coming up on the 5 years, and then being able to see this facility come to completion. You know, we have an opening. So you talked to the sheriff about the challenges.
Yeah, I was wondering how your staffing is. Yeah.
It is. And we're I wanted to give the sheriff a friendly push, because they pay significantly higher than Idaho Springs PD. Mm-hmm. And they took one of our officers not too long ago, just a couple months ago. We're a 9-person department, and we had at the time one female, and they took our female officer. So now I'm without that. And that's hard, because you try to recruit and get other people of different diverse backgrounds and women in this profession, because it's important. I want to be reflective as to what the community is, but darn it, the sheriff's department took one of our good people. But so
well-trained individual,
sure,
right?
A 7-year officer,
empathic,
a 7-year officer. So our council did boost our pay that during the last budget process.
Good,
but there's still a bit of a gap, and so mm-hmm. I have concerns about other people potentially being recruited away over to the sheriff's office. I'm happy, because I know that they're good people, but I don't want to lose them, because I want what's best for Idaho Springs. So,
Chief, I hear in your comments and in the new sheriff's comments as well, the need for openness and community outreach, and as you describe it, empathy. Mm-hmm. And it just seems to me that the technology of the automobile changed policing. Cops used to walk the beat, and sure. And you know, they interacted with the community. They knew who lived where, and mm-hmm. so forth. And for some reason, that connection was broken over the years. And I'm going to say the automobile had a lot to do with it. And I can see that there's efforts to go back to that style of knowing your community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't disagree with you. I feel like when I came into this profession, it was broken when I came in, and that's, you know, been quite a number of years ago. Mm. I'm my goal and my hope is that with this new facility, number one, we're going to be much more central and
be able to walk
in the downtown mm-hmm. area. Right. You know, I would expect not only it's easier for me to be more visible in the downtown area, our officers, and then you got to remember, we still have those 4 miles of interstate highway that are our responsibility.
That's right.
And
yeah.
that's where we need to be. We've got to be close to our cars in the right. event there's an emergency out there on the highway. So that's where it's drawing or having the not drawing a line, but having a balance between being able to provide what you're talking about, Mark, which I totally agree with. And I will say there, we have a couple of officers that are more in tune with doing this, and they tend to be a little bit more senior. They've been around a little bit more. They're more comfortable with, and they've known people. They've had a lot of interactions. And then it seems like the newer officers are the ones that we really have to train to, hey, you need to get out of your car and talk to people.
It takes a while to appreciate that what you learned in the academy isn't necessarily the entirety of policing, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you're training somebody, you know, they go through a 12 to 15-week training program, FTO is what we call it. I mean, you're trying to cram what I call 5 years of experience into somebody in just that short amount of time, mm-hmm. and exposure to everything and discussions about every scenario and every type of case, which isn't possible, because I still see things that I've never seen before mm-hmm. after all these years. But I think one of the other challenges with younger people that are coming to the profession, and we still have people that want to do this, is And the listeners can't see this, but I'm holding my cell phone in my hand, and a lot of people are just used to looking at their phones. Mm-hmm. And that skill set of making eye contact, having a conversation with somebody, and building the empathy that I talk about, mm-hmm. I think that sometimes becomes a bit of a hurdle with some of the younger people that are now, and I think about it, I have a 26-year-old, I have twins that are 20-year-olds, and that's what they've grown up, and an 18-year-old, they've grown up with that phone in their hand. Yeah. And so how do you break that when you're trying to create people that are professionals that are going to go out there and represent your agency and, you know, have those interactions? So I think it's even harder now. But there's ways for us to kind of, you know, push them into being uncomfortable and saying, look, this is what we expect, while they're in their training programs.
Chief, you said you have one opening, so that's a common ongoing problem, right? Filling the positions. But when you're hiring, do you do the hiring yourself, or do you have a committee?
So I have a sergeant, Ryan Frost, who he is in charge of the hiring. Mm-hmm. I try to remain a little bit impartial in case there's a question in the hiring process.
Now,
there is a chief's interview before the person is formally hired, so that I have the ultimate say whether this seems like this is going to be the right fit based on all these other circumstances with the background and drug tests and all these other things.
Yeah,
of course.
I'm sure you have a close relationship to your sergeant who's doing the hiring.
Absolutely.
What are your expectations in the person that you're going to hire? What are you looking for?
Well, I think it goes back to a bit of what I said about what I see is important. One of the things that we talk about in our profession is you have people that come out of academies, and you do have to be able to go home to your family at the end of the night. And I think, you know, we see a lot of videos, and we see them today, where we see officers being assaulted or being, you know, shot at or things happening. And so that's really ingrained because they want people to think in the back of their head, hey, at any moment, this could go sideways and I could be fighting for my life. I mean, and that's a reality we live in. But by the same token, and that's why I think I see more senior or more experienced officers, they can have that sort of mindset in the back of their head, but yet still have a very personable conversation with people and connect with people. So one of the things that's, you know, you want officer safety is important. Officer safety is certainly part of the foundation of what we do. But by the same token, that doesn't mean you need to create robots that go out on the road and they're very matter of fact, very unforgiving. And that's sometimes what you get from people that are coming out of the academy. So what I'm looking for, to answer your question, are people that are willing to, I hate repeating myself, but are willing to empathize and are mm-hmm. willing to make good decisions, but also understand that it's not a personal situation. You know, I've seen that happen too.
That's
officers
big thing.
You know, it's almost like they get slighted and they take it personally.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's not
the job.
It is the job.
That defensive posture.
Yeah. Sure.
That I think really ruled law enforcement for a very long
time. It did. I mean, you think about the 70s and 80s in law enforcement, mm-hmm. and that hasn't necessarily gone away in all departments.
Right. I think it was part of the old culture here.
And that may be. I think that, like the sheriff said too, I've been a part of the CHAT community engagement team, mm-hmm. so which was a result of the Christian Glass incident. And so I've had an opportunity to sit with the director of CHAT, the director of Department of Human Services, Dr. Tom Ryan. There's various community members a part of that board or that group. It's not a board. It's a group. It's an advisory group that mm-hmm. is looking at how do we move forward from the Christian Glass situation and learn from it. And I would say we don't want to forget that. I would say we need to embrace that was not a good thing. And shame on us if there's a repeat of that. Mm-hmm. So what are we doing? And how are we as in law enforcement as leaders and as a county in leadership working to try to prevent anything like that from ever happening again. And I think that's what the family would that's exactly what they would want. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm excited about that program. That program is
great addition.
Rampant. I mean, yeah. we are using those folks all the time. Oh. So, mm-hmm. I mean, if there's anything that is, I'm proud of that program. I'm very proud to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm. Chief, it's been great to have you back on the show. Any last thoughts before we have to go?
No, I would say, you know, I would ask people to follow us on Facebook. We're trying to do the same things as the county and making sure that we're as transparent as possible. And that's where all of our sort of news and happenings are found.
Mm-hmm. Chief Busick, thank you so much for coming in today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So happy holidays to everyone out there. We will not have a program. Next Wednesday, we'll be on with Chris Bradley in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's right.
But happy holidays to
maybe all I'll those come on and play some music. We'll see.
Listeners. Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
All right. Thanks again, Chief.
And
Lori, I'll see you in 2 weeks. I hope all your Christmas wishes come true.
Yours too, Mark.